fighting for America.
Hamas doesn't care about the civilian population in Gaza. They embed themselves in civilian areas. They use hospitals and schools and mosques. They want those civilians dead.
Fighting for Idaho.
And the Harry Reid Senate has become a factory for show votes, where votes are made that are more interested in winning votes for Democrats in November elections than they are for winning jobs for the American people. That's become the norm.
Fighting for you.
It's one thing to listen to people and to talk with them when you're a candidate for a position. Now, I think that we might have a qualitatively different conversation, and I want to listen first before trying to give my views.
Voices Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the morning.
We need to look out for one another, and that's what we try to do here each and every day.
On 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, we are joined by Alan L. Morton, attorney at law with us, Kevin Miller in the morning.
Well, good morning, Kevin.
And this is a young man who has fastly risen on the Kevin Miller Guest Power Index, and really not by being on the air, but by his perky, pithy Facebook posts about yours truly. Good morning, sir.
Well, good morning. I thought before we start, I was asked when I was in New York visiting with the American Broadcasting Association to present you with an award. I was very impressed with how... Many people in New York were familiar with your work, and as you know, before the Oscars, they have, as a precursor to the Oscars, they have the Global, the Golden Globe Award. Well, before we hear from the Marconi people, yes, with respect to the award, I was asked to present to you the 2014 Kraft Marconi and Cheese Award, and I just, for your viewers,
yes,
you know,
for the viewers,
I'm presenting you with the trophy that they've given. You can actually hear the Marconis and cheese.
Well, what we'll do is we'll take a picture of that, and we already have one of both of us on Facebook this morning, so we'll have to pose with that award. Thank you very much. I'm very humbled and very honored, and to all our friends on the Avenue of the Americas and the Broadway and everything else, my best regards.
Very, very good. So how are you this morning, Kevin?
Well, you know, we're always looking to talk to smart people here. Alan L. Morton, attorney at law, and a lot of people are talking about impeachment. I've seen you've done your work, but before that, you're always very passionate about defective products that impact the consumer. And do you have anything that you're working on that you'd like to share with us?
Well, as a matter of fact, I do. What's of interest in the automotive industry is the recent claims and lawsuits that have been filed against General Motors with respect to claims involving faulty ignition switches, which, as you may know, has been the center of controversy because there have been a recall of over $2.6 million Chevy Cobalts and Saturn Ions and other cars back in February. To forestall litigation, General Motors has acknowledged the problem with the faulty ignition switches and actually put together a compensation fund for victims of these ignition switches. We know that of at least 13 deaths and 54 accidents have been caused by these defective switches, but there's a limited time for claimants to file their claim for this compensation fund.
And the deal is you accept the $1 million and you sign a waiver never to sue General Motors again, right?
Well, that's actually correct.
Is that actually correct? What, you think I don't know my facts here at 580KIDO? You're smart. Now, is this a common practice? And you've dealt with these big corporations before. You've deposed them. You've gone up against them. So is this a common practice to say, hey, we're at fault. We're going to give you this. You don't have to go to court. You don't have to hire Alan L. Morton, attorney at law here at 580KIDO, and move on.
It's not so much common, but it's becoming more commonplace. It's actually started with the Sulzer hip implant litigation, where millions of people that had these so-called hip replacements were actually given defective hips. And Sulzer, rather than facing potential bankruptcy, put together an analysis of how many people were affected and then put together a compensation fund that was administered similar to what you would see in a bankruptcy, but without having to liquidate the company. And obviously, these companies are insured by large insurance companies with with aftermarket insurance, and they've made a calculation that it's actually better just to deal fairly with these people in a manner similar to what you would see in workers' compensation, have a tribunal that will decide what's fair compensation for these people rather than to have to litigate it in a jury format.
Does that really work, though? I mean, you've been, again, involved with these companies. What do you like the idea of the settlement, or do you like the idea of Allen L. Morton Attorney at Law taking on these big corporations? Because you might get more money, you might lose, but... I mean, you're going to have a lot of legal expenses as well. This is your area of expertise.
You have to look at what the cost benefit. The cost of bringing a lawsuit of this type and kind can be tens to hundreds of thousands of dollars just in costs. And depending upon the damages involved in each individual case, more often than not, I think it's better for the consumer to participate in a compensation fund of this type and kind rather than face the risk of loss associated with litigation generally, as well as the overwhelming costs that someone has to deal with. I know each of us have gotten a card in the mail and have been notified of a class action suit. You fill out the card, and then you get a check for 54 cents down the road.
Sure.
After you find out that the attorneys have taken millions of dollars in fees. And so it really depends on where you are in the spectrum, but it's really a case-by-case analysis. You need to talk to an attorney, and he or she can kind of guide you through the process.
But can you ever beat the big corporations? You've seen the movie A Civil Action, right?
Sure. Sure.
You know, the real-life story of the lawsuit against Grace Company. And John Travolta plays this lawyer who's very successful, loses everything. But in the end, Grace does pay. But the theory of these corporations that you go up against is, well, the little guy doesn't have any money. If he does, and we see it in broadcasting all the time where you have people that have been wronged, but the corporations say, well, go ahead and take us to court because they have the money, and they're going to try and wait the person out. That's not just unique to this business. I'm sure it happens all the time.
Well, it does, unfortunately, but there are many law firms. You know, I was affiliated with a national law firm. We had offices in Washington, D.C., New York City, Texas, California, and California. And we've dealt with air crash cases. We've dealt with product liability. We had an interesting case years ago involving the decapitation of a one-year-old with a car accident over by Shopko on Fairview. So I'm very familiar with these type of expensive litigations. But what's interesting, at least in this particular case, General Motors has come to terms with their liability in this particular case and have decided, I think, in the right format, not to contest these cases involving these 13 deaths and 54 accidents, and have put together this compensation fund. Now, as of last Friday, only 10 claims have been filed.
Right, but Allen L. Morton, Attorney at Law, with us, Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580 KIDO. But let's really take a look at GM. And as I said to Dave Petzo, my heart goes out to people that have to sell these cars, that believe in these cars, that build these cars, that are dealers, because this is a tough sell right now. But if you have a problem, and Allen L. Morton, Attorney at Law, you know it, if you're liable, I mean, the first thing that you have to do is you have to go out there, and if you have liability, you have to get that fixed. I mean, we have cars on the road that are still defective, and GM goes, well, we're going to have to wait 10 weeks for the parts. And you're driving around with a known dangerous vehicle. To me, there doesn't seem to be a sense of urgency here. How does that play into the liability of General Motors?
Well, it's huge, you know, and something like that. Once a problem is recognized and a recall has been issued, they have a duty and responsibility to get that vehicle fixed and to notify the consumers of the problem immediately. We noticed an interesting market situation here locally after we had filed suit dealing with the Volkswagen Jetta. That was back in 1997. Consumer confidence in the Valley affected the sales of that particular organization, and they weren't selling any Volkswagens for months.
Right.
And General Motors is very much aware in a world market, they've got some responsibility. And the first thing that happens when something like this is announced, as far as a recall is concerned, consumer confidence is in the toilet, and people aren't going to buy their cars. And so they've got to move quickly to try and remedy that, not just for the safety of their consumers that have bought their cars, but also to protect their sales momentum.
But where is the sense of urgency? By the way, phone number's here, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We'll talk impeachment coming up next. However, where is the sense of urgency? I mean, if you have some nails sticking out of your fence, you get those fixed so people don't get hurt. When your vehicle's defective, a case that you're familiar with the Bridgestone Firestone tires. And by the way, that company rebounded better of a situation that could have taken down Bridgestone, but because they understood the sense of urgency, it seems to me, and this is where you come in, and is it fair to say you're a trial lawyer, one of those evil trial lawyers like Grisham talks about? You can be our John Grisham here, but that's where a trial lawyer comes in, right?
Well, exactly, and it's interesting that you mentioned the Bridgestone-Firestone case. I spent a week in Akron, in your hometown, taking depositions.
That's God's country, buddy.
Well, I tell you, I was very impressed.
A lot of overcast skies, a lot of depression there, yes.
But I'll tell you, particularly with the week that I spent in Akron taking depositions of the Bridgestone Firestone people, when you're dealing with corporations, you're dealing with risk management, you're dealing with attorneys, and when you're dealing with a recall of this type and kind, there are $2.6 million Cobalts, Saturnians, out on the road.
Right.
And these cars are fixed at the local level. And so as soon as they make the announcement, there's just not enough parts that are out there initially. And so you're dealing with trying to put into the pipeline, millions of parts all over the country to try and fix this problem. And so I know that they're doing their best effort to try to remedy this, but at the same time, it's never enough.
Well, I'm sorry, Alan L. Morton, attorney at law. I'm sorry, but I live in a zero-sum game, and when somebody says, well, just don't weigh down your keys on your key when you insert your keys and everything will be fine, I don't believe them. I got to tell you, I think Toyota handled their recall with the Camrys, and I think mine was one of them, a lot better. I mean, look, okay, how realistic if you're driving a car, there's a defect that we go, okay, special orders, we're stopping everything, this is our priority. But with these big corporations, and we don't mean to pick on General Motors, but in general, they're responsible to the shareholders, so they have to keep up the profits going at the expense of the consumer. I mean, in the old days, we had the Sherman Antitrust Act. Now I've gone off on progressive Kevin Miller here. But who's looking out for the consumer today?
Well, I'm one of them.
But I mean, but you're not free.
Well, that's true.
Right.
As we always say, is that I'm available, but I'm not free. But in any event, General Motors initially.
Thank you for letting us know that.
There,
by the way,
there
yes.
you go, my friend. Just like you, we all got to work. We all got to eat.
Yes, exactly.
Have another donut, by the way.
Thank you. I appreciate that. We'll get to your bake sale commentary in a minute.
There
yes.
you go. But General Motors initially, like any other corporation, denied responsibility. But when these 13 deaths, were staring them in the face, they just couldn't walk away any further. The government stepped in, a recall was ordered, and they're playing catch up. I don't think though that it's a PR maneuver on their behalf to set up the compensation fund. Risk management has made an analysis that, hey, we're on the hook for millions of dollars here. Let's try and get through this as best that we can to avert litigation. And quite frankly, there are a lot of people out there that just don't want to deal with the court system. They don't want to deal with lawyers. And General Motors knows that.
They might be selling themselves short, though.
Well, in some cases, that's true. But in other cases, not necessarily so. It really boils down to what's the damage, what's your injuries. In a death case, certainly that's something that you want to consult with an experienced trial lawyer that deals in product liability.
Like
John Edwards. There you go.
Alan L. Morton, attorney at law, 580-5436. So coming up next, you want to give some commentary about the bake sale, and you're mad about that, number one, the banning of the bake sale in schools. Maybe you should, maybe you'd like to bring a lawsuit against the administration.
Perhaps. But I tell you, it is a personal affront that when you read in the paper.
Well, no, that's a tease.
Well,
we're teasing the next segment here.
When you see the situation where the federal government is telling local schools that you can't have a bake sale
right.
for funding,
Well, no, we're going to talk about that next.
Okay.
Okay, so number one and number two, we'll talk a little bit about impeachment. You were getting into it with a lot of people on Facebook. You don't back down when it comes to the Facebook, do you?
Well, it's an interesting medium where you can have a conversation with a number of people with multiple opinions about certain things, but oftentimes, like, opinions, you know, they're not always laden in facts.
I like people with the same opinions. More coming up with Alan L. Morton, attorney at law. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Let's get you to work.
Everyone is talking to Kevin Miller.
Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Kevin. A pleasure to be with you.
Good morning, Kevin.
Hey, good morning, Kevin. How you doing?
Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Kevin. Every
morning. Join the conversation with Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, Alan L. Morton, attorney at law with us. Last time we saw you, we were at Lionheart Tactical, and didn't you buy some ammunition, or do you want to disclose that?
Oh, sure, absolutely. And some fire starter for the Boy Scouts.
So some fire starter for the Boy Scouts. So let's take a look at a few things here at 580 KIDO. This lawsuit brought by John Boehner as opposed to impeachment. Why do the lawsuit as opposed to impeachment?
Well, both legal scholars in and outside the House of Representatives have convinced the Speaker that the road to impeachment is basically a road to nowhere. Even Paul Ryan, conservative Paul Ryan, has indicated that there's just insufficient grounds to impeach the president based on the facts as they are today. But the House of Representatives, by a majority vote, has given the power to the Speaker of the House, if he deems it in his discretion, to proceed with the filing of a lawsuit against the president dealing with his use of executive orders. And I was interested in that, not just from the standpoint of a lawsuit, but also the historical background dealing with executive orders. And I found something interesting that you might find interesting, Kevin, as well as your listeners. The fact is that the use of executive orders by the executive branch go way back to the Civil War. President Lincoln used the power of executive orders to eliminate slavery well before the 13th Amendment was debated and adopted by Congress to eliminate slavery. He had used the law as a lawyer, I might add. He had used the law claiming that slaves were property and then appropriated those slaves and freed those slaves by executive order. And, of course, Congress, members of Congress, and I might add at that point in time, the Democratic Party had an objection to the use of executive orders in framing law in and of itself. But now the House of Representatives has empowered the Speaker, so we envision what's going to happen is that the Speaker is going to, through his legal counsel, be filing a lawsuit against the President over his use of executive orders. Now, what's an executive order? An executive order is given full force of law, just like legislation, so long as it's in pursuance of certain acts of Congress or based upon discretionary authority in the Constitution. And so here's the problem. Just because you file a lawsuit doesn't mean that the court's going to hear the dispute to its ultimate conclusion, because there's certain burdens that a claimant has to establish in order to allow the court to render a decision. And we refer to that as jurisdiction. There's two types of jurisdiction. One that we refer to as subject matter jurisdiction, and another that we talk about personal jurisdiction.
This is why we hire you, so you can just do all the stuff for us. Because, you know, you've lost me there with the Krispy Kremes.
Well, what I was going to say is that the problem is this.
Okay.
Is that before the court will hear this controversy, assuming that the Speaker files the lawsuit, he's going to have to establish what they refer to as standing.
Right.
How have I been injured?
Right.
Am I entitled to the relief that I'm seeking? And that's the rub of it in this particular case. It's a case of first impression, but I'm always surprised by what this court will do. I was totally surprised by Chief Justice Roberts' decision in upholding Obamacare.
Well, that, let me jump in here at 580KIDO. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but you've argued before the Supreme Court, right?
I participate in briefs. I haven't actually rendered the argument, but I have been on the team that we presented briefs to the Supreme Court and rendered argument on,
right,
on a number of cases.
And,
yes.
And there are tons of cases that never get to the Supreme Court. So you have Justice Roberts flip-flopping pretty much to the detriment of the country here with the Supreme Court case. What does it take to get a case to the Supreme Court? And how do you see the same-sex amendments that are getting shot down going to the Supreme Court based on Windsor?
Well, here's the situation, is that there are some cases that the Supreme Court has original jurisdiction over. And then there are the rest of the cases. Those are cases that are specifically relegated where the court has jurisdiction to hear them. And those are very limited. Those are like disputes between states. Say you've got a property dispute between the borders of Utah and Idaho, if that were ever to happen. They go directly to the Supreme Court to resolve that particular dispute. But for the rest of us, you end up filing a lawsuit either in state court or federal court. And then you go through the appeal process. If you file in federal court, say here in the District of Idaho, an appeal then goes to the Ninth Circuit. And once the Ninth Circuit renders their ruling, then you petition the court by way, what we call by way of writ of certiorari, to ask the court to accept an appeal. And you've already nailed it, the point that most of these cases are not heard by the Supreme Court. They're rejected outright.
And, and that in itself is a decision.
That's correct. That's correct. But in this particular case, if Boehner files, he'll decide, where do I want to file it? Do I want to file it in Ohio, or do I want to file it in the District of Columbia?
Sure.
They'll do some forum shopping to determine where he wants to file the suit, and then he'll file it. The district court will then make its ruling, and then it will be appealed to the circuit. Then it goes to the Supreme Court. Likely, in this case, it may end up with the Supreme Court because of its prominence, you know, and case value as far as precedents in the law. This is a huge fight that deals with authority. It's a huge fight that's one of first impression, meaning it's the first case of its type and kind that's been before the court. And it's also a case dealing with both executive privilege. It's also involves with the separation of powers doctrine of the,
right,
of the Supreme Court, that they will decide as to what the true powers of the executive are with respect to the use of executive order.
More coming up with our friend Alan L. Warner. Are you hanging out, or are you leaving?
Well, I'll be here as long as you need me.
All right. More legal advice, legal opinion with Alan L. Morton, attorney at law. If you have a question about impeachment, about the bake sales, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. You're listening to 580-KIDO.
Glenn Beck, weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580-KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
I'm so excited to talk. I'm talking over the big voice guy, Alan L. Morton, attorney at law with us. Kevin Miller in the morning at 580-KIDO. If you have a legal question, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Let's get back to a couple things. Now, you're a big football guy, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And you give back to the community. One of the pleasures that we have here in the Treasure Valley, and you know, throughout Idaho, is the Optimist football. And with the scary things that are happening to big kids and big people, how concerned are the folks that run Optimist about concussions and injuries? I mean, we're dealing with 9-year-old little boys.
Well, the program has changed over the years, but particularly recently, we've adopted what's referred to as the Heads Up program. And it's a change in not just in philosophy, but technique in dealing with how to tackle, to avoid or to minimize the risk associated with concussion, how you tackle, how you.
Do they have concussions at that age?
Well,
head injuries. I'm not trying to,
right,
to scare people, but I mean, can that happen?
Well, it can, but the risk is no greater than playing lacrosse or even playing in soccer or cheerleading. The concept of concussions in football, I think, have been overbroadcast because the risk statistically is just the same as when you're dealing with cheerleading or soccer or lacrosse. But we've addressed this issue with what I mentioned, which is called the Heads Up program. Every coach in Optimist football is mandated and an online program dealing with the new techniques that we're teaching children as to how to tackle. And we penalize for children who violate, if you will, the mechanisms to tackle. If you're spearing, if you're headbutting, these type of things aren't tolerated anymore, you know, and they can, we penalize them normally through conduct with a 15-yard penalty or even an ejection if necessary to teach the children, you know, the rudiments of the game to protect them, particularly at this age and level.
What's it like to be involved in? And people here in the Treasure Valley, Optimist football is such a part of their lives, but, you know, most of us, we watch Boise State, we'll watch the NFL, whether it's the Seahawks or the Broncos. But then you have the little boys that are, you know, out there getting their first taste of football. How do parents, coaches, and folks there put everything in perspective?
On a case-by-case basis, perhaps, but... You know, I've been doing this for a long time. I've been involved in the teaching and coaching of children for 18 years. And I've seen a change overall dealing with the attitudes. Of course, parents get younger every year to me. Now, you know, I'm a grandpa. I'm a father of five, a grandpa of seven. And I have children in the program. What is really a joy to me is working with children and teaching them. And our focus of attention is just not to educate them on the techniques, but also to have fun.
Right.
You know, to teach them how to have fun and to teach them the winning philosophy and good sportsmanship. This is absolutely imperative and somewhat missing in our social discourse. You see this on Facebook, you know, from time to time, very uncivil dialogue that goes on with people. And what we try to teach children is above all, you know, the importance of good sportsmanship. You know, these are the things that we focus as teachers and as coaches. But every now and then in a game, you'll see one of the things I like about Optimist Football is that the teams and the coaches are on one side of the field and the parents are on the other. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason for that, you know, so that the parents are basically relegated not to be coaching but cheering their children, but not to be interfering with the coaching process or for the umpires. The umpires in the game are in many cases high school students, and they make mistakes. There's no question about it. Have I been upset with a call on occasion? Oh, yes. But even though you're upset, you engage in dialogue with them to ask them what did they see and what was the rule, and it's all a part of educating and teaching.
Sure. Know? Alan L. Morton, attorney at law with us, 580-5436-580-KIDO. Let's hit a couple of things. Now, you almost ruined the tease last half hour when we're talking about this bake sale where we have the government saying, Kevin Miller, you're a plump, rotund bell pepper. We don't like that. We want you to be a svelte green bean, so we're going to make you a svelte green bean, even though you want to be a plump bell pepper. And by the way, little Kevin Millers, you're not allowed to even live the life of a plump bell pepper. You're never going to experience husky jeans from Sears. You're going to sit back and you're going to be a string bean. Look, life is not about being a pencil neck geek. You should have some plumpness or rotundness, but with this bake sale, that might be going way of the past.
Well, I read in the paper and researched online the recent decision by the Department of Education, an order, talking about executive orders, order mandating the cessation or the stopping of bake sales involving children at elementary, middle school, and high school levels. And that was what prompted me to go to Krispy Kreme's last night and brought over a box of donuts for us today. You know, and what impressed me on the box is...
Well, you're describing... Is this what content has become here at 580KIDO in the morning that we have Alan L. Morton, attorney at law, describing the Krispy Kreme donut box?
Oh, let me tell you. I'm looking at these donuts and my mouth is watering. But in the box it says, fundraising. Need to raise some dough for your school, church, sports team, club, band, and charity? And
not anymore.
It deals with Krispy Kreme fundraising. And, yeah, well, you say not anymore. It's just offensive to me that we have government basically telling us that we can't sell a donut in school.
Maybe it was you people that ruined it with the cigarette legislation. How about that with your lawsuits with, look, if you smoke, you're a bad person. So everybody took the good, hardworking tobacco companies to court.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, Kevin, but I don't know where eating a donut it causes cancer.
Well,
but
it causes obesity, which causes cancer.
I beg to differ. Eating an occasional donut isn't going to kill anybody.
Who says an occasional? How about 12 at a time?
Well, that's
more,
a little different,
you know?
but we're not talking about legislating, you know, quantity. They're saying we're not going to allow any donuts or any bake sales.
Isn't that the fear in this litigious society today? By the way, Alan L. Morton, attorney at law with Kevin Miller here at 580 KIDO. Do you agree with me that we live in the gilded age of litigation?
Well, absolutely.
Yes.
Thank
you. You would be a robber baron.
Thank goodness for that.
The gilded age of litigation.
Well.
And here we have the government threatening to take these schools to court if they don't follow.
Well, you know, what's interesting is just what the recent decision by the Idaho Supreme Court dealing with that very issue as to who can take the bar and who can't.
Yeah, there goes my backup plan.
Well, I'll tell you.
Because this gig ain't going well. I was going to be a lawyer, and I was going to have you as my mentor, but apparently not.
Well, you can, but you have to go up to the University of Idaho, apparently, and get your education.
That's a monopoly. The state's directed a monopoly.
In this particular state, the poor students at Concordia
Law. How did we go from law school, from donuts to law school?
Well, they go hand in hand, let me tell you.
Okay, well, you'll have to explain that to us.
Having studied for the bar, I ate many of apple fritters, I can tell you that.
Yeah, this is
way.
Very compelling stuff here.
Absolutely.
Yeah, all right, more with Mr. Compelling. We'll depose him in a minute. Alan L. Morton, attorney at law. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580-KIDO, 647. Let's get you to work safely and
easy. Weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580-KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Coming up next hour, we'll catch up with our friend Nagmade Abedini. Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580-KIDO. Plus, we'll have an update of the Marine detained by the Mexican government. That's next hour here at 580-KIDO. Alan L. Morton, attorney at law, tasting one of these Krispy Kreme donuts that could be outlawed very soon.
Boy, are they good.
Hey, let me hit you with this, though. Now, we've got the Ada County Sheriff's Department having folks wearing cameras, and they say, well, they're not going to film, I guess, victims of crime or what have you. But have we lost a sense of privacy when everybody has a camera? And do you have any rights to tell the officer quit filming?
Well, the question is, why did they have the need? And apparently there must be a connection between trying to inhibit the police officers from going to Krispy Kremes every day.
Oh, my
so
goodness.
Now we can keep track of where they are. But yeah.
Now, that's not very nice.
Well, you know, I know. It's a bad attempt at humor early this morning, but that's what you get.
Look,
but
we all know about bad attempts at humor in the morning, sir.
We're all specialists in that. The issue though, with respect to Ada County is a movement that's sweeping the nation dealing with police officers. And again, you mentioned litigation. There have been claims that have been brought to the forefront that have gone back, from the beginning of time dealing with police agencies, dealing with the question of what constitutes excessive force. You know, lately we've been having a litany of cases and press coverage dealing with officers shooting dogs and how much force is necessary to bring down somebody, you know, wrestling them to the ground. And you've seen shows like Cops and other shows. The selling point for these cameras is actually to protect officers from claims of excessive force. You know, now they've got a camera that videos each and every encounter. You may not know this, but the technology has been in use for years dealing with recording of conversations between an officer. When he pulls you over, you're being recorded from the moment that he approaches you in the car, audibly. And that is used in court, dealing with the conversations that you have, even though you haven't been advised of your rights.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard time and time again of officers and conversations with people in traffic stops. But now they've got cameras that show, and this is going to be very helpful in dealing with prosecutions for DUIs, for example, you know, how people are handling certain field sobriety tests. called the night statement test. Now you'll be able to actually see what the officer sees when he's administering the test.
Unless they lose it.
Well, that's a different issue. But since you mentioned it, spoliation is what they refer to as when evidence is destroyed. There's a presumption of the law if you lose or you destroy evidence, that there's an inference in the law that the very fact that evidence has been lost or destroyed means that the jury can infer that it would have been adverse to your position if you lose or otherwise destroy evidence.
So. Sure, but Alan L. Morton, attorney at law with us here at 580KIDO. Let's go to a broader spectrum here. So I guess when we're looking at the Ada County Sheriff's, that's a liability issue, number one. And number two, I mean, don't we have a constitutional right to privacy? You take a look at the Fourth Amendment, that seems to be out the door, and no one seems to be upset. Well, some people are upset about it, but nothing is done. As somebody once told me once, hey, you can break all the laws you want as long as there's no one around to enforce it. Have we come to that in our society today? Is that where we are?
If you read the Constitution, and I have from time to time.
I have Tom Munns who reads the Constitution to me.
There you go. The point is that nowhere in the Constitution will you find the word privacy anywhere. It was just Justice Douglas years ago that said that, well, within the penumbra or within the shadow of the Constitution lies inherent the concept of privacy upon which the Fourth and Fourteenth Amendments come from, the concept, and,
right,
as well as the First Amendment. You know, this penumbra, you know, of privacy. But in living in a fair and balanced society, we focus on balancing interests of law enforcement versus privacy. You know, we have officers out into the field that don't necessarily have to have a arrest warrant in order to effectuate arrest if they see a crime being committed in their presence. What we're talking about is documenting what they're observing. And so, albeit there may be certain rights of privacy, they're not taking these films and putting them on CNN, you know, for people's interests. They're using that, you know, in court to be able to document what they themselves observe.
Alan L. Morton, attorney at law, we appreciate it. It was supposed to be a half hour. He stayed for an hour. Typical litigator.
Glad to help you.
Thank you very much, sir. Let's get you to traffic currently. 6:59, Kevin Miller in the morning. Coming up next, Nagmaid Abedini with the latest on Pastor Saeed.
Serving Emmett.